Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, we talk about our president-elect, Donald Trump.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
The ballot of the bullet. Some freedom or some bullshit. Will we ever do it bigger? Just keep settling for little shit. We brag on having bread, but none of us are bakers. We all talk having greens, but none of us on acres. If none of us on acres and none of us grow wheat, then who will feed our people when our people need to eat? So it seems our people starve from lack of understanding. Cause all we seem to give them is some balling and some dancing and some talking.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, show where we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I am Joe Braswell, joined as always by Mr. Kitty Shine.
Yes, sir.
We are listening to KM. Mr. Atlanta's own Killer Mike.
Yes, sir.
A Bernie bro.
Yeah.
But I guess a Hillary convert, but a Bernie bro to the end, pretty much.
I love Killer Mike in the sense that he doesn't just use music as his platform for expressing, you know, his social political views, but he's actually out boots, you know, foot and boots in the streets, you know, yeah. trying to promote, you know, a different type of consciousness. So yeah.
And not only that, he's also been very active. His latest thing he's been on and still is on is just this whole the notion of black banks and supporting black banks and getting, and they have these two or
That's
three
right.
black bankers that he's really with,
yeah.
trying to get everyone, all of his fan everyone, to
exactly.
to be a part of this black owned banks.
100% more independence within our with our economics,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, but I looked into it. My man's only got like 3 ATMs, but
it's okay.
But you know,
we got to start somewhere.
We had a normal show. There's plenty of tech news to talk about, but there are some things that we feel are probably a little more pressing than kind of what the goings on at Facebook and Amazon and Twitter are.
Yeah.
Namely, the goings on of our country, of these United States. Last night, by a pretty decent majority, our country voted Donald J. Trump as our president-elect, which
yeah.
is you know, it's been a good 12 hours, maybe about 10 hours since that was called, maybe for, you know?
Yeah, almost.
And I got about 2 to 3 hours sleep.
Yeah. We're all like physically and emotionally depleted.
And I just didn't know. I called this morning and I was like, I'm not sure if we do the show. I'm not sure that I can do the show. I'm not sure if I should be on a hot mic.
Yeah.
We had some breakfast. We talked it out. I feel a little better about being able to express ourselves. But
I think it's important. You know, it's a degree of catharsis. In the sense that we want to be able to at least have the platform to express our views and release it, because, you know, keeping it within only builds the frustration. So
absolutely.
I'm glad that we continue to the show, you know.
So I want to just this. Let me, like, we can talk first. Let's talk about, like, you know, I want to talk to you about sort of watching this. I mean, it's a slow moving car crash, but it's actually been a slow moving car crash for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know? But it was really a slow moving car crash last night, and I just watched as the rest of the country did in disbelief as state after state got redder and redder and redder and redder.
Yeah.
And states that were previously blue, red.
Yeah.
Counties that were previously blue turn red. There's a lot more going on here than a rejection of Hillary or a support of Donald Trump. And I just want to get your thoughts and reactions to what was going on with you as you were watching and kind of what you were thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely your analogy of a slow car crash and just seeing frame by frame, you know, each state going from blue to red, or, you know, each state being projected as Donald Trump is the winner. I mean, and then juxtaposing with my emotional, you know, framework and just anxiety was very rapid pace. It's like, okay, my blood's boiling, but seeing all this in slow motion, it's just like within myself, I'm battling, like, hey, what is happening? Like, I'm thinking of my child. I'm thinking about young folks. I'm thinking about the future of this country and world, and like where people are with their consciousness and just how people align with their values and with their ethics and just how insidious this whole thing is, and really how split literally split this country is. But in a way, you know, I had to remind myself historically, you know, it's always been this way. And I think having some degree of comfortability living in California and not really seeing a lot of the juxtapositions of race relations and just the inequities of this country, not really faced with that, you know, because I don't live in middle America or various places where people confront that more often, I felt like that kind of veil was placed over my eyes and just, yeah, I felt comfortable. And that kind of was stripped away, you know, or the reminders like, hey, bro, like, this is, yeah, it's 2016. Yeah, we have Obama for 8 years. We have a black president. Yeah, there are some improvements, but really there are a lot of things that have been the same since we as black folks have been in this country. But, I feel, and I want to throw it back to you just to kind of get your initial reactions and takes, but I feel like for me, I always have to put things in a historical context, and sure, I can't just take the emotional elements and lead with that. It has to kind of be a confluence of both, because if I just go with all emotion, how I'm feeling, I'm going to be depressed. Right. And I might say or do things that are not strategic, that are not well thought of. But putting things in a historical context at least gives me promise and hope, because I feel whenever there's a tragedy, whenever there's moments of pain, there's always moments of promise and moments of triumph that soon to follow. And I think that having such an extreme example of disparity and inequality, and having America led by a person that is blatantly racist, I think will do so much education for the world. Right. And so I can unpack that, you know, as we talk more, but I do want to get your initial reactions. What were you feeling and thinking as stuff was unraveling?
I had some real sort of, I think it was mostly kind of disbelief. I was pretty surprised, actually. I think I was a little, I felt pretty good about the whole thing leading up to this until, I think, last Friday, watching, you know, the whole email stuff, and then watching Bill Maher last Friday when he had Obama on. Hmm. And he was particularly, like, nervous, and was really like, look, this shit could happen. Like, this is a slow moving right wing coup. Comey, like, Russia, like, this is happening. Like, do not give me that false equivalency bullshit. Don't, like, you guys need to get out there and vote. And he was so adamant about it that it actually got my attention.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and I got a little scared. I'm like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. And not for anything, Michael Moore called this. He called it outright. He called it outright months ago.
Mm-hmm. Like, sure did.
He said Trump will win.
Yeah, he did.
He's mm-hmm. like, he wasn't even going with the Trump could win. But like, Michael Moore is but he's a guy who is from Michigan.
Yeah.
Understands, you know, white working class guy as an ardent Democrat, and his boots on the ground himself, and is like, something's going on in this country, and yeah, Trump is speaking to these folks. And he was like, and everyone, including Bill Maher, was like, come on, Michael Moore, just don't, he could win. He's like, no, I don't know, man. So anyway, cut to now. But yes, I was concerned then. But what happened to me was that as I got on 538.com, I looked at the map, 71% for Clinton, the map looked right, the path looked good, yeah, you know, she was leading, and she had a 55% chance of winning Florida, 57% chance of winning North Carolina.
Yeah.
And then Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania were like up in the 60s and 70s for Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Like in terms of what they projected. And they right. still were really never wrong.
Right.
So I looked at all those models and I felt pretty good about, okay, even if we lose North Carolina and Florida, there's no way we lose with the Rust Belt.
Exactly.
No way we lose
Wisconsin and Michigan.
Yeah. There's no way. So as this thing,
I mean, especially being that those are states that are traditionally known to be Democratic and yes. blue states, like there's no way that could turn into a red state.
And Obama carried, and then right, right. there's just no way. And Hillary was polling extremely well. It wasn't right. even like that she was. No one thought polling well. The model was showing well.
Yeah.
And we got to North Carolina, things were fishy. You're looking bad. We got to Florida, things were looking goofy. You know, and I was still okay. And New Nevada was still holding. And then even New Hampshire, I'm like, okay. But then Pennsylvania looked pretty strong still.
Yeah.
But when we got to Wisconsin and Michigan, and it
so the uh-oh moment.
Well, but it all happened really quickly. Like North Carolina, Florida fell, then North Carolina fell, and then Wisconsin and Michigan were close.
Yeah,
like too close.
Yeah, too close to call.
And I was like, uh-oh, like that's not supposed to be close right now.
Exactly.
New Hampshire was losing, which was supposed to be a win.
Right.
And that's when I thought, that's when I knew something was
problematic.
Going
yeah, it was
wrong.
Troubled.
And then Pennsylvania began to turn, and then it just went bad. So I to answer your question, I was in shock. I think I was just in shock as I watched the whole thing, and when, until they announced, you know, I didn't see the actual announcement. I actually left the house.
You have to go take some breaths.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I was in shock, and I was remained in shock until this morning.
I mean, I have a degree of shock as well. And almost like an emotional numbness, I felt a myriad of emotions, from anger to disappointment to sadness to hopefulness. But when I think of, you know, when I think of, you know, from even a technological or even a social media perspective, or just where we are in terms of how we are able to serve a metrics against things, and how we acquire numbers and analytics, and just the polling mechanisms for how they were able to project, hey, Clinton is up, you know, X amount of points, 9 to 10 points. And then, you know, how all that is kind of like promoted through the media, and how that built up our hopes in terms of, oh yeah, this is definitely going to happen. Like we're excited, you know, and to have that kind of like just literally overturned right before our eyes. I think that's what's most jarring about it, is because if people would have known, it would have been like a close race based on what the media was projecting, based on what research said. I think that, you know, it wouldn't be as, the reverberations of this wouldn't be as great. And I feel, and I made this analogy to you offline, I feel like the whole country's been hit with a massive earthquake, and we're all just kind of like standing here, you know, figuring out what we're going to do with all this rubble around us, It's just, I don't know, man. It's so many things that we could talk about in terms of direction and what are the appropriate steps of moving forward? How do we get past the emotion? What is the historical context that we should be viewing it? What is the framework for how we should be analyzing this? And man, I feel like just takes as a black man, takes as just a person I think that has, you know, decent set of values. Like what is our, you know, personal responsibility to this country, to our community, to our world? You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if you're viewing it or asking those questions, but that's definitely what's running through my mind, you know, at this time.
I am asking those questions. There's a lot of like really, like, I don't call it whatever you call it, come to Jesus moments, whatever. Like some real, in real time, just having these moments of like wake up calls, essentially.
Yeah.
Like real wake up calls as to like sort of what's happening, and it's slow. Speak to the parent thing. I mean, you know, Van Jones had that thing in real time last night on CNN where he like got a little teary eyed and talked about what do I tell my kids. And
that was a brilliant expression, by the way. Very brilliant.
Yeah, like, and you could tell your kids, you know, not to bully, not to this, not to that, and then look at that guy, and I got to tell my kids that like this guy got elected.
Yeah,
and not only that, like he very eloquently talked about this being a sort of a white lash,
exactly.
You know, and this is very much against you know, sort of what's happening in popular culture right now and in culture, and then also it's 8 years of Obama.
Exactly,
people felt marginalized or pushed out. I mean, this is what's happening to the white working class. They're really strong feeling about that, and they're speaking out about it.
And I feel that's exactly, I think that's a great analysis, in the sense the white lash. Against, you know, Obama, not because of his policies or because of his political orientation, but because of his skin color, because of his race, because he's a black man. And I think that, you know, it defies the sense of logic and just solid values. Like everything that Trump has represented on his campaign has been antithetical to any good, sensible way of living. Like he's disrespected every type of group, every type of ethnicity, every type of grouping. And I feel like
it tells it like it is.
But I feel like, you know, the white supremacist values on the white privilege, I feel that is what's being enforced. And what we're seeing in front of our eyes is that and that's what's being executed, because it's not about the future. It's not about your children. It's not about the environment. It's not about education. It's not about just good decency and just good relations between people and expressing our humanity. It's about, hey, me feeling like my whiteness is being at the being represented at the forefront, and 8 years of Obama and seeing all these things that are culturally happening, I feel like my whiteness is being suppressed.
I want to get back to that. It's just an interesting thing. I'm very curious as to what the people who are consciously and subconsciously who feel this way from a cultural standpoint and the reaction that they've had, if this is in fact true, which I do believe it is true, what do they think these next 4 years are going to bring? Like, what do they think that all the black people and black culture and gay culture and diversity just going to disappear?
Yeah.
Like, what do they, like, Trump's going to have everyone eating bologna sandwiches and mayonnaise? Like, what's, or whatever? Like, what's going to happen exactly? Like, is he going to enact laws that suppress cultural, no more Beyonce concerts? Like, what's, I don't understand what's going to happen, but I'll get back to that in a second. But I want to move on to the how this happened. I want to get into some analysis, and I think that you and I had some pretty decent analysis as to the how, and I want to talk about that. But I just also want to talk about, just finish on the reaction piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, like, the biggest sort of, like, moment where of disbelief that I had some with my friends on text and everything else is that, like, that this is the country we live in. Like, I kept telling myself throughout the entire election, I was so angry.
Yeah.
Like, that I can't believe that people thought these things, were affirming these things, that people at the Trump rallies, Trump was allowed to do this, that people blah, blah, blah. I was so upset that, like, the statistical number of the non-college educated white males, and now we learned that it's not just non-college educated white males, it's also college educated white males and college educated and non-college educated women.
Right.
I think college educated women still broke for Hillary, but, like, those three categories, I mean, white men, college educated and non-college educated.
Yeah, we're high.
And non-college educated women, they all broke for Trump. So,
exactly.
I mean, but anyway, the point is that, like, I was just, like, that they thought and affirmed all these things. It was that I saw in front of my face. It made me feel like, I used to say, Bill Maher and those people say that the Republicans live in a bubble. Their facts are in a bubble. They're in the bubble. Mm-hmm. What happened to me is I feel like that maybe I was in the bubble.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I'm in the bubble.
Yeah.
Because I'm, like, in a world where I talk to people who are college educated, who are informed, who are liberal. I live in California. I talk to people in New York and California and Atlanta and big cities and da 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 and Denver and all the people. Like, people seem enlightened. People all, no one I know is really talking that mess.
It's the illusion of inclusion. Like, we feel because we have certain material possessions or certain access, or we feel our lives, our personal lives are going in an upward trajectory, that we feel included in the fabric of what America's supposed to represent. But that's an illusion. When you really start to strip it away and you look at things systematically, like, it's full of madness and full of dysfunction and just the hypocrisy of it all. You know what I'm saying? Like, we represent this concept of freedom to the world, but look at what's happening within our town, cities, and communities.
Yeah.
Like, look, we talk about the popular vote, right? And it's literally split 50-50 damn near. Like, 100 million people voted for Trump, 100 plus million people voted for Hillary. Like, literally, the country is split.
Yeah.
Like, and so that says, that's not something that just happened. That's always been the case.
And those aren't ideological lines. Those aren't political ideological lines are split across, right? These are cultural and racial lines are split across. Like, these we're talking about everything from LGBT rights to Roe v. Wade to just being black or being Mexican, you know?
Yeah. and then your religion, like, you know, your freedom to be able to enact and pursue whatever religion that you see fit. Like, all these divisive things that, you know, kind of are swept under the rug, and we are kind of, I would say brainwashed and programmed to think that this illusion of what America is. I mean, you have to strip it away and look at it as it is and what it is. And what it is it's very dark. It's very, I'm not trying to create like a dystopian America, but in many respects it is, you know?
Well, I mean, this is my point. Like, I literally, like, had this realization that, like, it was like a Black Mirror episode or Twilight Zone episode where it's like the whole time, like, they're in the bubble, they're in the bubble, they're in the bubble, and then at the end of the episode I look at the map and I'm in the bubble. You know, it's like a bad dream,
man.
And I was like, oh, I'm the one in the bubble. The whole rest of the map is red.
Yeah,
the map is red. I'm in the bubble. Like, that was a really incredibly stark realization, and
100%.
It's something that I'm really having to come to grips with, because it's the truth.
Right.
Like, this whole time I've been, like, under the illusion that, like, well, you know, yeah, there's people are out there, and they're the fringe, or they're kind of this, and they're talking all that shit, and they're that, yeah. But really, this, we're all out here. We voted for Obama twice.
Yeah.
It's 2016. Lil Wayne's on 60 Minutes. Like, you know, everything's fine. And yeah. Then the map is red.
Let me ask you this, man. I mean, we talk about this often, but just us as a people, as Black folks. But I wanted to ask you, as it related to, you know, our participation in this election, uh-huh. and how we showed up or how we, you know, didn't show up as it related to voting.
Okay. Yeah, let's get into the how this happened.
Do you feel that we as a voting bloc, we as a people, showed up like we did in previous elections? That's one question. And if you feel that we did not, what are your theories and reasons as to why?
Well, I think that what's frustrating about this, I was talking to my daughter about this morning, like one of the most frustrating things about this is that, you know, there's been documented, and if you haven't seen the documentary 13th by Ava DuVernay, check it out. There's
excellent documentary,
by the way. There's systematic, like, you know, institutional, since Reconstruction to now, like efforts to sort of like, you know, get Black men and Black folks out of the voting picture and into the, you know, into wherever else, and, you know,
marginalized, the marginalized box,
marginalized box, and incarceration is the easy way to do that. Yeah. No, it's Reconstruction is you know, Nixon did it, Reagan did it, their own record by saying it. Mm-hmm. So now that we know it, so we have thousands and literally generations and thousands of Black men and women who just can't vote ever
for the rest of their lives.
Done. Like, yeah. For Nixon and Reagan, mission accomplished. These millions of people can't vote; they're felons.
Yeah,
Latinos too. Yeah. So there's them. So that's already there. Then you have another group of millions, statistically, as you were telling me, like younger, more millennials, but it's just another group of millennials who are voting age who aren't voting.
Disillusioned, disenfranchised, have no political, completely apolitical.
I call this the Lil Wayne group.
Man.
They're just not voting. They don't care. Yeah. Whatever, the system, whatever, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And then you have the millions and millions of registered voters, the right. Obama coalition,
yeah.
people who went out and registered to vote, that didn't die, didn't go away, didn't disappear, they're still registered, registered to vote to 08, the millions more who registered to vote in 12,
exactly,
the millions more who registered to vote in 16.
Correct.
So you have all of these people, it's all about Black folks only, and it's all about young people and Latinos and everything else, who are ready to go. If they vote, maybe we win. If they all vote.
I disagree.
If you look at it statistically, the entire Obama coalition, well, not minus the young people,
right?
Yeah,
and Latino folks,
yeah. But so why? But the point is, even we didn't all come out there,
precisely.
So why? I don't know. I really think it's just it speaks to the Bernie of, at the core of the Trump movement. At the core of the Trump movement, it's been characterized as a white working class movement, but an anti-establishment movement, which it is, but it's really not just a white working class movement, it's a working class movement. Bernie tapped into the same thing. Bernie tapped into the same thing on the left. Elizabeth Warren's tapped into the same thing on the left, and it's an anti-establishment. Like, the way the system is working now is not work. We need to change the system. We're all sick of the system.
Yeah, of course.
We've all been born into the system. We're sick of the system. You know, Washington. And that's what Trump did, tapped into, and that's what Bernie tapped into. Bernie lost, and Hillary came in. I'm the system.
Yeah,
the
system's gonna work. But it splintered the party as well.
And I think Black folks are like, oh, the system?
Right.
Fuck the system.
It was, I mean, you're part of incarcerating us. The Clintons are a part of incarcerating us as a people. But I feel,
what do you think?
I feel, as it relates to Black folks and our disillusionment and a political stance, is I feel, in a way, America as a concept and an execution is very Shakespearean, in the sense that, hey, we all want something that we can never have.
Right.
Almost like Romeo and Juliet. They want to be in love, but that love can never be manifested because of all the other... I feel like that's the narrative of America, because of the original sin, because of slavery, because of all these things that went into building the concept of America. It's so polluted and so... it started off on such negativity and corruption. I feel like that what we all dream to have can never come to fruition. And in that sense, I feel that a lot of Black folks feel like their vote is meaningless. It's like, why am I doing this? Every time I do this, I don't see any result of me doing this. Like, and I get the argument that our ancestors fought for it, and that we should exercise that right as being citizens of this country. But time and time again, election after election after election, if we cast our vote and we go about this process to have our viewpoints and our and to fight for the dreams of our children, and we never see the results, it's like, well, why would I continue to do that? I mean, and so that's where the apathy comes from. That's where the disconnect comes from. That's where the lack of education comes from. And I think that is detrimental to us as a people. And but I think that having such a polarizing result as Donald Trump as president will at least give us a different context in how we discuss these things and what we do as a people as it relates to our political efforts and our how we socialize ourselves around certain issues. But I feel that was kind of another depressing mark on the chalkboard as it relates to what our people were able to achieve right. with this election, because I felt we should have and could have done more in terms of just showing up, because I feel like, yeah, these two people aren't representing us, you know, in the best way, but you know, we still have to exercise the right that we do have, which is to vote, and even if it is voting for Hillary or someone else, but we definitely don't want Trump in there because he's not going to represent us at all. You know.
Let me ask you this: what happened with Latino? What happened with the Latino vote? Because the Latino vote, I mean, Trump is on record first thing out of the gate. You know, Mexicans, rapists, criminals. I'm building the wall.
That's like, the thing that I don't understand.
Mexicans. Like, I mean, he is very specific on Mexico and the border of Mexico. Yeah. And frankly, you know, our Latino population in the United States isn't made of Mexicans. It's made of Latinos. Yeah. They're Dominicans. They're Cubans. They're Puerto Ricans. Yeah. They're, you know, South Americans.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot. But what happened? I kind of talked
30%, about this a little bit.
I know kind of what happened in Florida. Like, we talk about the Cubans. Cuban population have historically voted overwhelmingly Republican, not just because of religion, but because of where they came from, the anti-Castro, anti-communist attitude, the attitude like, I'm an American now, I'm an American. The overcompensation, if you will, of like I'm not one of them. I'm now... like as good as white people, therefore I want you know white people shit, and I'm gonna vote Republican and do that shit too. Like, that's overwhelmingly Cuban population, you know, have done that for years.
Yeah.
And when you think about all of that, all those folks in throughout the Southeast and the Northeast, like, you don't have a lot of Mexicans. You have a lot of Puerto Ricans and Cubans,
Caribbean
and
folks.
Caribbeans, yeah. And Dominicans and all that stuff. And, you know, so that's a whole different sort of vibe there. But when you talk about the Southwest, Texas, we know Texas has a traditionally low Latino turnout,
right.
high Latino population, low Latino turnout. That's just a cultural thing in Texas.
Yeah.
Whether that's undocumented immigrants or whatever it is, it's just folks don't vote. Same thing in New Mexico. There's a phenomenon in New Mexico.
Arizona.
And Arizona to a certain extent, especially in New Mexico, there's a phenomenon that's going on in New Mexico where you have a set of a large Latino population. There's a large group of Latinos who identify themselves as not really Mexican.
Yeah.
Like, those are people who are the dirty Mexicans over there.
Yeah, that's not my folks.
Me. I don't talk like that. I don't have an accent. I don't do whatever. I dress a certain way.
Yeah.
I may be of Mexican descent, but you would never know. They're super whitewashed and super proud of that. That's a cultural New Mexico thing that is a phenomenon. So those people also break Republican. That's why that state is red.
Yeah.
You know, as well. And I mean, you know, not there's a shitload of white people in New Mexico, but it's a red state. And so then you have Arizona, very similar, mm-hmm. like, you know, and so in California is blue. So I don't know. I feel like that message that Trump is spit, I think that like the mistake here is to look at Latinos as a monolith, as like, you know, all Latinos are a monolith of culture. They're all, you know, like we think in California, they're all Mexican, you know, but they're not all Mexican. A, B, they're extremely nuanced through all kinds of things, and South Americans and Cubans and other folks don't identify with that, and really may say, yeah, I'm from Guatemala. Build the wall. Keep the Mexicans out of here.
I hear that, man, and we even see that within our own community. Like, there's 10% of us that voted for Trump, you know what I'm saying? And the concept of this Uncle Tom, like, I guess you find it in other ethnic groups, but that's
is that number 10%?
It's 10% of us that voted.
Nationally?
Nationally.
Black people.
Black people.
African-Americans.
African-Americans. it's troubling to me that Latino folk, Black folk, what was identifiable about what Trump was presenting or saying that would make them cast the vote? Because number one, Trump never, he never once outlined anything he's going to do.
Sure.
So like, what is he saying? Yeah. What is he presenting?
Your community is bad. You walk down the street and get shot.
Yeah. How is that fertile ground to put my vote into? You know, there's nothing that, I mean, maybe that's just the framework in which I view things, but it's just very difficult for me to see. Like, if you just ask yourself practically, if you look at it just facts, like what you see, what the trajectory is, what the history is, like what has he done, what has he said that's going to make you want to vote for him?
I can theorize, aside from his, you know, whatever his stance on the, you know, his so many racist, documented racist issues in New York, you know, and including his full page ad against the Central Park
Five.
Yeah. But like, I think I can theorize that his message to working class folks who feel disenfranchised and left behind. Look, they're Black factory workers too. They're Black coal miners too. They're Black working class folks too. Like, these people feel like their jobs are getting shipped. These people are affected. These are their folks in Detroit and Madison, Wisconsin, and, you know, and Durham, and all these people who in Virginia, like, who maybe feel disaffected by the system.
Of course they do.
And maybe feel that whatever Trump is talking about from his economic message,
which is what,
which is nothing. Which is exactly. I'm gonna get the best people, but
that's not my point.
But whatever that is, look, 100 million people bought it. So
hey, you're right.
Whatever that message right. is, like, people bought it.
But why did millions of Black folks buy it? That's what I'm asking.
I think that people, you know, what we don't like is we don't like the system. We don't like the establishment either. That's why we voted in Barack Obama. That's why even Bill Clinton initially was like, he was not, I remember thinking like, Bill Clinton is slick. He's not like, he's kind of a centrist. And then once he got in, you know, second, you know, I was like, okay, Bill's cool, you know.
Yeah.
And then I didn't really know at the time that what his crime bill was doing at the time.
Of course.
But, you know, I was all, and still am, pretty pro Bill Clinton except for the crime bill.
Right.
But like, you know, and Obama like represent something very specific. Like, you look at, you know, even John Kerry, you look at just our Democratic candidates. They look and feel like something we, most of us who are Generation Xers or Millennials or even Baby Boomers have seen their whole life. You know, Baby Boomers are still waiting for JFK. You know, he ain't coming back. And Millennials Generation Xers are still looking for Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't coming. And Millennials had Barack.
Yeah.
But he was, you know so when Hillary comes in, that's not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what they're looking for. So yeah. I don't know. And it's just people make, and look, people really talk about, I think at the end of the day, and I really hate to say this, but for this climate,
yeah.
not only for this climate, Hillary was just the wrong candidate. She's just the wrong candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, not that she wasn't qualified, and she's literally was the most qualified person to ever run for office. She was, you know, 30-year public servant, blah, 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 blah. But she's also a lifelong politician who has a shitload of baggage and a shitload of things from the Clinton, from the Starr fucking investigations to Lewinsky to Whitewater to so many investigations and so many things that the Republicans have done that, whether they're true or not true, mostly untrue, mostly debunked, that stuff sticks over 30 years.
Yeah.
So people who just even tangentially kind of already half know about Clinton, yeah, man, she's always doing some lying, dirty shit. You know, like, that's what people know. Like, oh, yeah, she's a liar. I know about her. I just, my whole life. I'm 30 years. I'm 32. Yeah, Clinton's a liar.
Yeah, man. I mean, I see those points as well, and I tend to agree with that as well. It's just difficult, you know, really getting past just, you know, where we are, you know, as a country and what the future looks like, you know, what environment am I raising my child in, and what legacy will he be able to step in, like, as we talk about, you know, education, as we talk about just opportunities, you know, for him to have a life of purpose and a life of promise. Like, it's just very scary, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I I guess my question to you is, like, what do you forecast? How do you envision the transfer of power? How do you envision, because like they have, the Republicans have, and Trump has, every branch of the government.
Time it's happened in years.
Exactly. Executive, judicial, and legislative branch of the government. I mean, like, so my question is, what do you forecast is going to happen?
Doom. No, that's not funny. I'm not optimistic about sort of like the immediate legislative future, or how the 100,000 people who did not vote for Donald Trump will react. How half the country will react to this. It's just numbers alone. It's kind of a bad mix when you have half the country on one side, and then you have both the House, Senate, Supreme Court, and the President over here.
Right.
Like, that's a bad mix. That's 100%. Like, we're going to impose this stuff, and I know half you guys don't. Plus, there's another 100 million that didn't vote.
Of course.
So, who are sitting there, like, going, like, oh, this is stupid. But, like when they start dropping those laws, and these dumb motherfucking millennials on Snapchat were like, what? What happened?
Right.
Like, how come I don't do-do-do-do? Like, it's shit's going to get, like, real.
But I think that's the beauty of it all. And with, like I said, with every strategy, there's triumph. And the triumph is the knowledge of this, so that it may not happen again, or we might be more, you know, intelligent in how we approach things. And I think that's what needs to happen, just more education, more hard-hitting facts, you know, because once some of those laws hit you on the local level, millennial, and they affect you and your personal trajectory, millennial, then you might think you might be more politicized, because now this is directly affecting you.
For sure.
I think a lot of us are disenfranchised because, I mean, it's an electoral system, and we always look at it in the viewpoint of California, too. Like, yeah, it's a blue state, you know, whatever, my vote doesn't count, you know. But hey, your vote does count. It counts on electing judges. It counts on you know, what propositions are passed.
California is doing great right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, say what you want about Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
Like, economically, socially, like, we're doing, the only thing we don't have is healthcare.
Right.
And Colorado, did that pass in Colorado? Colorado had the single payer healthcare, you know, up on their ballot. Like, if we can get that on our ballot in 2 years. I mean, California is doing pretty good. You give me healthcare in California? Like, what am I complaining about?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, but, you know, I don't know. I want to go back. I know we're going to get out of here soon, but there's so much to cover. But I just want to get back to a little bit about the how. Just touch on one thing, because it's a really key point that Lola brought up, actually, last night. I'm just railing up against, sort of like, you know, in general to everyone I knew about... you know, the Obama coalition not coming out. Like, what's happening in Michigan and Wisconsin? Like, if only we were voting, this wouldn't be happening. But a couple of things happened. Actually, Trump got out the vote. Like, the red counties got even redder.
Yeah.
Like, people who haven't voted in 16 to 25 years, 24 years, came out and voted, especially in Florida. They got in their swamp boats and wherever they got
the
in.
The bottom feeders of this country.
Those rural parts of the country found their way to the voting poll and voted hard for Trump, and they never vote.
Exactly.
That'd be the equivalent of, like, you know, inner city black folks who never vote. It's very similar to what happened in 2008.
With Obama, correct.
Yeah, like, people who never vote, voting.
Right.
Like, and so that,
and
so
it's hard to poll against those people that are disenfranchised, because you don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah, they don't exist.
They don't answer polls. Right. They don't answer phone. They just pop up, like, I'm voting.
Right.
And so that's the first thing. Second thing is especially in the Rust Belt, he flipped so many, you know, Democratic white counties, so many white suburban counties that voted for Obama, like, flipped for Trump. A lot of these counties flipped for Trump.
And I think that speaks to the arrogance of the DNC and Hillary Clinton as, you know, as a campaign, not to be able to have more resources or more visibility in those areas. Because historically, traditionally, those are blue states. We're going to win them. So why, you know, in your war room, why even put, you know, resources there? Because hey, it's a done deal. We got that.
They didn't fuck with Michigan or Wisconsin like they should have. Like, I mean, they touched them, especially Michigan, a little bit, because of the water and everything. Detroit, like, you know, but like Flint, but like they didn't mess with that at all. And so,
I think that was the biggest mistake strategically.
What this looks like. So what this reminds me of, just like some small historical context, is what this looks like. The way this map is flipped, it reminds me of what happened pre-civil rights in the '60s. Like, when you look at all the maps, and people will tell you, and you think about, like, all working class whites, you were Democrats.
Yeah.
That's the working class whites for the Party of Democrats. Like, this is the unions, these are the working class whites, rights, whites, Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. The political strategists in the 60s, mid-60s, 70s, post JFK, saw an opportunity to flip those working class Democrats on what people are called, what they called at the time, wedge issues, which literally centered around integration, busing,
right.
Crime, and those are all sort of code words for black people are coming to get you.
Pretty much.
You know? Yeah. So the wedge issues turned out to be racial issues.
Of course.
Civil rights. The civil rights movement was really kicking in like 1960 through 1965.
Mm-hmm.
So, got it. Oh, and so, white folks got those wedge issues flipped. Democrat on every, I'm a Democrat through and through, except for on civil rights, segregation, and, that's it. So this is kind of what happened now.
Yeah.
You have a whole collection of white folks who are, this is this whole political correctness background, like, who are really like, I'm not a racist, like, I like all people, I like everything, but I'm super uncomfortable with all this black shit that's happening around me, and the black president, and all this stuff, and I can't say anything, and I can't do anything, and then the Mexicans are taking their job, and Muslims are everywhere, and, like, Beyonce is always on TV.
And gays are getting married.
And gays are getting married.
And Muslims are protected.
I'm not even allowed to say anything about it, because if I do, I'm a racist, or a bigot, or I'm a homophobe, and I'm just a normal person, so I don't know, this is bullshit, and Trump's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah, exactly, Trump. That's what I've been wanting to say.
Yeah.
And we had like the last thing I'll say is you have that mini kind of like Bradley effect, which in 1984, when black mayor Tom Bradley of Los Angeles went for governor, overwhelmingly the polls were like, he's going to win like by landslide. But what happened is people said they were going to vote for Bradley, but they got in the booth and they couldn't vote for a black dude.
I think he lost by
a landslide.
I think to that point, too, a lot of in terms of the polling mechanisms, we talked about this earlier in terms of, hey, yeah, visibly, or publicly, I'm not going to say that I'm going to vote for Trump or tell you that I'm going to vote for Trump, but privately I will. And so it's very hard to gather the right analytics against that. And we talk about, bot technology on social media and how a lot of especially with the Trump campaign, like, a third, if not more, of his followers on Twitter were not real people. But the messaging, the propaganda that was being, enforced through Twitter and Facebook, that's swinging people's perception.
Yeah.
And so you have the overt racism, you have the covert racism.
Yeah.
Silently, I'm going to vote for Trump, but publicly, I'm cool.
I mean, there's just two facts. There's people who are like loud and proud, like sort of the alt-right, like borderline white nationalist, borderline racist, people who are like, I'm saying it.
Loud and proud.
Then those people who really don't want to be at a dinner party talking about I'm voting for Trump because they don't want to be at a dinner party and be like, well, Trump is kind of good.
Right.
And they get yelled at by their liberal friends or yelled at by people who voted for Obama in 2012.
But in that voting booth.
But in a voting booth, they're looking around like Trump. And
exactly.
That's what you saw.
Exactly.
Like, you saw that. It's almost like the Trump-Bradley effect. I want to talk about DraftKings real quick, and then we're going to give her some final thoughts and get out of here. DraftKings is still happening. Football season is still happening through the election, through everything else, and I am still losing in both of my football leagues. So DraftKings, thank goodness for DraftKings, so we can play every single week. If your season's going poorly, just like mine, doesn't matter, with DraftKings, you can draft a brand new team every single week. It's 1 week fantasy football, no season-long commitments. You never have to worry about the waiver wire and all that other bull crap. Everything is brand new at DraftKings.com. You have all kinds of contests. You win your share of $1 million this week. You can play every week. What you want to do is go to DraftKings.com, start a new season at DraftKings.com. Use our promo code GEEK. You can play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code GEEK. Play for free to share your in over $100,000 in total cash prizes this weekend, only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. Check your website for details. We were going to end this, and you were kind of talking about what the path forward is, and sort of like an optimism, and what we have to look forward to. I want to ask you what we're seeing now is immediately you've seen this whole movement of, and I'm not sure how I feel about this, but CalExit, there's a whole movement of like California, we want to secede and be our own thing, and like there's a petition out already. This is like real. There's t-shirts out already.
Exactly. The like, state broke off in the Pacific Ocean.
Exactly. We're our own people. Like, we don't know what's going on in the rest of the country, but we know what's happening here. Don't put us in that shit. There is you know, there's already protests. I'm reading right now, protesters in Seattle.
Oh, they're like, all over Portland.
Portland. People are like really are like starting to, in the cities, which overwhelmingly Clinton won in the cities.
Yeah.
Overwhelmingly. And in these metropolitan areas, Clinton's word. But what is our path forward? And how does Trump, if at all, how does he unite us? And we haven't got into enough time to get into all the geopolitical ramifications.
Yeah, we didn't touch that.
I just do want to mention, though, the first and only person to congratulate Trump was Putin, world leader.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, quick congratulations. The entire parliament broke into applause.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to be friends with America. Trump's like, so fine by me.
Right.
Like, that's very worrorsome.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. So, aside from the geopolitical stuff, which is, you know, whatever, what do you think what's going to happen domestically with a country that's split right down the middle by racial and youth lines? What's going to happen? Because one last thing, because Pence has already came out, the first thing he said is, I'm going to repeal all of the LGBT stuff.
Yeah,
gone. That's the, he said it like the first thing he said, like, hey, we won LGBT, get out of here.
I think that we will be, well, I'll say this, I think that Trump embodied, we talk about this narrative that we've been experiencing for the last 2 years from Trump, you know, announcing his that he's going to campaign to now being president-elect, this narrative of this dark hero concept, and creating a climate of fear, a climate of climate of fear is the best way to describe it. And I think when you have a presence of fear, you know, people's reaction to it becomes Pavlovian, in the sense that, hey, when you put a mouse in a maze and you put the cheese here, the mouse is going to do the same thing every single time. And so whenever you're confronted with fear, you're going to make a reaction that's not necessarily rooted in intelligence or logic. And I think that's what we have here. And I think that is going to create a climate of deep introspection and deep analysis, deep reflection, all those things. And I think that, I keep saying it, I feel that whenever you have something that is adversely negative, it's only going to birth something that's beautiful and positive. And I feel that we're going to be in a climate of protest, which we've already been in, but it's going to be more and more. I think what America represents internationally is going to be questioned, and I feel other countries are going to really be responsive to this. I think we're going to have a lot of effects as it relates to our relations globally. Obviously, race relations is going to be something that's going to always be at the forefront, because that's how America was formed.
Right.
I mean, all the things that are divisive, all the things that contradict the ideals of America, I think we'll have to literally face. And yeah, they might be able to promote these concepts and get things passed legally, but I think grassroots wise, and I think in terms of, you know, there being a movement of younger activists and people that are more politicized, I think we're going to see that more. I think it's going to really force us to be, it's going to force us to be involved. Like, the apathy is going to diminish. That's what I foresee, because you can't sustain an environment with so much incongruities and imbalances. Like, yeah. There's going to be a point of conflict, and I feel that that's where we're headed.
How does that conflict manifest itself? Violence, through protests.
I think it'll include everything, every form of manifestation. We've already been faced with it. We've already been faced with riots in the street. We've already seen that in our country's history, and we'll continue to see the history repeats itself.
Right.
And so I think that the difference with this is, I think it's so extreme and so adverse that I think that we might be a little bit more smarter in terms of how we deal with it. At least that's my hope.
I mean, look, the map is done, right? Like, you mean the baby boomers are dying. The baby, for the first time, the millennials out, you know, are larger than the baby boomers, except the millennials didn't vote. You have millennials, you have blacks and Latinos and other taking over the country. The demographics don't lie. The Democrats
cities.
Cities don't lie, but look, Democrats have won liberals have won the popular vote 5 times,
and lost
the election,
yeah,
5 times out of 9 elections.
That's terrible.
5 times out of 9 elections. So you know, I don't. The demographics are there. Like, what is it going to take for these? Do you think these young folks, Latinos and African Americans, are going to you know, form this coalition.
Yeah, I think
that'll move forward.
It might be a creation of a new party. It might be just new political ideology that comes to the forefront.
The Killer Mike Party.
Hey, I know you'll be his wingman.
Run the jewels.
But yeah, I think that it questions even the fabric of America's electoral politics and how archaic the system is, and whether or not it's a framework that, you know, still serves this country. I mean, because when you make that juxtaposition with the popular vote versus the electoral vote, I mean, when you look at historically why the electoral vote was even, that framework was built, was because not at the time women couldn't vote. Obviously, we couldn't vote as black folks. It was only rich white folks that owned land. And so they did that as a way to protect checks and balances so that a certain block or a group of people couldn't sway the rest of the country. So you had the electoral politics. And that we used that system for 240 years.
Yeah.
So why can't we have a different system? Why can't there be some type of amending change with this, how we go about our election process? Because clearly Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Like, how come we don't have a different system of how we elect? I don't know. I'm just positing that. Yeah. I'm not saying that's necessarily a solution, but is it something that we should question, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see how this moves forward. I just, you know, just in closing, I'll say that, you know, women, you know, look, women couldn't vote. Like, women just got their right to vote in the 20s, 1917, in the 20s, the whole suffragette era. Yeah. It was like
19th Amendment.
Yeah, and then we couldn't vote, you know, until the mid-60s. Yeah. You know, like, couldn't even vote in this country until, my mother's, you know, in age. My grandmother couldn't vote, you know, so it's...
Still can't vote.
Yeah, well, yeah.
The prisons, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, listen, like, we can't take this shit for granted. Like, and this is just a lesson. I mean, this is, you know, this stuff can't happen, it will happen. And when they start, when Pence and Trump and Giuliani and Christie start dropping all these laws, Republican cuts are repealing, you know, abortion, you know, Roe v. Wade, and you know, all the LGBT stuff, and Obamacare, and enact all these weird, crazy immigration laws, and try to deport people, and you know, what's next? Are they going to repeal the Civil Rights Act? You know, yeah. we'll see where it goes. You know,
and those things happen. The frustration will overflow.
Yeah,
the frustration will overflow, and that flow will create something new. And I think that something new, I can't necessarily title it or put it in its own category or box, but I think that's something new. We're already in that process of it happening. So
eighth largest. California has the eighth largest economy, I believe, in the world. So I mean, we are almost our own country. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, that'll do it for us. I you know, look, check out Hillary's concession speech. It happened. It was very sort of inspiring and really sort of a call to action in its own right.
Did you see Obama's speech?
I did not see Obama's speech. I didn't see. I actually got to catch up on stuff. I'm not as grim. I'm a little more rational, hopeful.
When I woke up,
I feel like I can function, but it's definitely a dark day. Where can the people find you?
The people can find me on
the streets,
Twitter and Instagram at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And my last note is, hey, you guys, keep your heads up, keep your back straight, keep your hearts flowing, and, you know, use your gifts and skills to bring about positive change in our world. That's what I always hold myself to, and I just want to put that out. Where can they find you?
Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell, Snapchat at JK Braz, and I want to echo that. You know, it's far from over. We have a lot to look forward to. We have a strong base of optimistic, wonderful people in this country. The country's not the country that Donald Trump wants to restore it to. So, you know, we'll be okay. All right. See you next time.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.